This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Jeff Calkins is columnist of the Daily Memphian, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN from 9 to 11 on X at Jeff underscore Calkins. Jeff, how's it going?
Good. How do you feel about a Euro?
A Euro? I'm not a big fan. Not a big
really?
Fan. Yeah, I'm just not.
What's not to like about a Euro? I think they're one of the best things in the world.
I don't. Maybe I've never had a good one. Maybe I've never had, like, maybe that's it.
I mean, it's just bread and that
and meat and maybe meat, some tzatziki or whatever.
Yeah, tzatziki, and that's about, like, whatever. And then some tomato, onion, and whatever. And then it's warm.
I've never been. The Greek food
kind
just.
Kind of a mess, which I like.
The
you
Greek
know?
Food just. I don't know if it's ever really. I don't know if it's done it for me. I've never been a huge fan.
Go to the castle, which is a modest place on Park. It's right next to. Well, poor Elwood Shack closed. That was unfortunate, wasn't it? The second
yes,
Elwood
that,
Shack.
Yes, that really hurt you. That hurt.
Did you ever go to that one?
Oh, is
that
the one you I go mean, to? that was almost an every right. week occurrence for me and my wife.
Right near our house. Yeah.
Yep. Loved it.
Tough.
Loved it.
But right, it's right just a little bit west of where the old Elwood Shack was, and it's a modest little place. Walk in, get a gyro. And report back. There's also a new Indian place.
Are you a falafel guy? Do you like falafels?
Not that much.
Okay.
Not that I like a gyro. It's my favorite. And then, of course, I hate eggplant. An eggplant is heavily featured in some Greek food.
We're talking like even an eggplant parmesan, even some Italian.
Yes, we've discussed
that. You.
What I will tell you about eggplant parmesan is people say, oh, have eggplant parmesan. You can't even tell it's not. You know, you can't even tell it's eggplant. And if the best thing you can say about a dish is that you can't tell it is what it is, I rest my case. Like, give me veal parmesan or chicken parmesan, and I don't have to deal with that nasty, slimy-ass eggplant parmesan. There's also, though, a new Indian place on Park that I want to try out. Someone I was texting with said it looks a little sketch. It does, I guess, just whatever. It's modest. It's called Four.
Okay.
Like, that's an impressive name for a restaurant, right? Four.
Yeah.
And so I need to try the new Indian place on Park as well. Just a little discussion, a little neighborhood food stuff with Gabe here at 5 o'clock.
Yes.
What were you going to ask me?
Oh, I have to revisit the conversation we had last week about Shedeur Sanders dropping. Now we know dropped to the fifth round. So I was going to open up and give you some credit for. I was more trying to say the fall. Was going to end quickly after the first round because, you know, maybe his talent was not first round and clearly teams didn't have him as a first round pick. But a fall to the fifth round definitely sort of confirms what you believed. I know it was anonymous sourcing. I know that the entitlement and all the interview conversations get to be old in the draft process, but that definitely seems to have come back to bite him. The arrogance, the entitlement, whatever anyone thought of him, That's why a guy drops as far as he did, no?
Yeah, I think you were right last week when you if he had electric tools, if he had, you know, I don't mean ones you plug in like from Craftsman. I mean, you know, real toolsy, if he was a toolsy quarterback.
The Josh Allen arm, the legs.
Yeah, he could have been brash or too arrogant or not had an agent or whatever it was. It wouldn't have mattered. He still would have gone up high. And so I think it's really a combination of two things, and I'm not breaking news here. It's obviously he's not physically equipped to be an elite, elite prospect. And so therefore you start taking all the other stuff into account. And when you start taking all the other stuff into account, then it starts to slide. And now you're having, it's still interesting, you're still not having more stories emerge. Like Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated, he had two stories in the piece that he wrote about this. One was a club put in, a team put, when they met with him, put in one of his interceptions up. And instead of saying, yeah, you know, I really blew that, or here's what I misread on that, you know, whatever, what he said was, you know, he sort of got, he got irate and defensive, and he concluded, well, maybe we're just not a good match, which is not the kind of thing you would say in a job interview, right? And then another team, evidently, again, according to Albert Breer, they put up a couple of some stuff, and they wanted him to catch the mistakes, and yeah, he didn't. Yeah. And so, and again, when he was called out, when a coach said, what happened here? He just got defensive and dismissive, and it didn't go well. And it is true. Someone said to me, if you, instead of thinking about these, you're supposed to treat them as a job interview, yeah, not as a recruiting visit. You know, right. And he treated him more as recruiting visits.
He treated it as you guys need me more than I need you, right, which in the end of the day, I think he found to be the wrong way to handle that.
Right. Now, in the end, if he is a terrific quarterback, then what we will do is we will say the NFL cared more about their yes sir, no sir, you know, cookie
control.
Control, then they let that obscure their recognition that he is a excellent quarterback.
Yep.
But the truth of the matter is most quarterbacks miss, right? I mean, most of them just don't pan out. So the odds are that the NFL will come to see this as some great mistake and a comeuppance to the way that they view quarterbacks and their need for control and humility and all that stuff. I think the odds are slim that that's how it will turn out. This will be, my God, how did they miss on this? You know, with Warren Sapp and with others, you wonder, you look back and you said, how the hell did they miss on this, right? And although we sort of know with Warren Sapp, and the odds are he won't be such an effective NFL quarterback that this is going to cause regret on the part of NFL teams. Probably not.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that I just do still despise is like the active public shaming and hate for the kid. Yes, he's entitled and all that stuff, but the issues they have with Deion talking about it before the draft, right, and wanting to force their hand, that's happened before. It wasn't as loud. We look at the Mannings, and I know that Eli was probably a more toolsy quarterback or whatever you want to say, a better quarterback in college. I can get there with you. But the active hate for the kid is just too much for me. It's way overboard.
Well, the good news is that the prank call then has sort of softened that because it's made
him.
Yeah,
I mentioned that yesterday.
Right? Yeah, yeah, the fact that he's getting he's victimized, I think, well, honestly, after he falls as far as he does, and then you learn that along the way you had a prank caller pretending to be the, right, the Saints GM pretending to draft him, all of this, you know, successfully turned him into a sympathetic figure. And so maybe that's good. And now the nice thing about the Cleveland situation is it's totally up in the air. He could emerge over the next couple of years as the starting quarterback. And because of this, there's sort of fewer expectations. He can go in there and maybe he can just be, you know, just another guy who's trying to win a job.
I will say, I think that's a bit naive to think, though. He will still be a big
yeah,
face and
story.
Somebody that is a story that is talked about on a consistent basis leading up to the season on NFL Live and otherwise. I mean,
I agree with that.
Yeah,
but maybe he will approach it differently now.
Okay.
You know, maybe this is sort of reset.
I like that hope,
and maybe he will approach it differently.
Yeah, so I like that hope. Also, for your Buffalo Bills, did you like Brandon Bean yesterday? Buffalo Radio, just you guys bitch about everything. Stop bitching.
Well, what was funny was that I was actually going to play that clip on, you know, whatever, on my show and say, well, how do people react to this? Is this a, and if people don't know, Brandon Bean did a regularly scheduled, you know, draft review thing on WGR, which is a sister station of ours. And I went back and I listened, and while he was on hold, the two hosts were talking about how Brandon Bean never drafts a wide receiver, which is something, by the way, you brought up last week.
Yes.
Right? This is basically the discussion that we had last week. And Brandon was listening, and so he comes on, and he's just, you know, you guys sound like 2018 when everyone wanted me to draft the other Josh Rosen instead of JJ, and he just rips them. And
they were quiet as hell, too, by the way. Nothing you can say.
The funny thing is that, I mean, Bill's radio has been talking about receivers. It's like an ongoing thing forever. The wide receiver train, and they make a train noises and whatever else. Like, they have a train sounder. And so they're obsessed with getting receivers. But Brandon Bean said what I said to you last week.
Yes.
The Bills literally, over the course of the season, scored more points than any other team in the league. The goal is to score points, so maybe it makes sense that they focus on defense rather than getting, and let's be honest, in this wide receiver draft, once Matthew Golden's gone, who's really the only real speed guy who could complement what they have, they weren't going to have someone who was going to beat out one of their top four receivers. So I'm kind of with Brandon Bean on this one. I think the obsession with receivers, when you literally lead the league in scoring the most points, is a little ridiculous.
Worth pointing out, though. If the wide receiver room sucks this year and the offense takes a step back, which, yeah, listen, yeah. I don't necessarily expect.
Take a step back. This
is going to be sound that could potentially follow him in a really bad way.
Right, and let's be clear. The Bills do have a bottom half of the league receiving core, right? They do. When you're looking at Shakir, the hope is, though, is that they did what they did last year, scored more points than anyone else. And Dalton Kincaid had an off year. People are expecting every fantasy draft had him as the number one, whatever, as a really high tight end, and he had a bad year. He was banged up, so expecting a better year from him. Keon Coleman didn't have a great year. Now, maybe he'll never have a great year. But a lot of times you see receivers take a big jump between years one and years two, so the hope is that he will be better. Curtis Samuel was hurt all year long. He actually was pretty good towards the end of the year, so they're hoping that he'll be better. Khalil Shakir is a very good slot receiver. And so there is sort of hope for internal growth, but will they likely take a step back? Yes, they will likely take a step back. And the other problem is that are they really going to get, was it 16 touchdowns again out of James Cook? Like, that seems unreasonable, yeah. Right? He had like the year before, what did he have, two or something like that? I don't know that number. But so they got an extraordinary year from him and an MVP year from Josh Allen. So it won't surprise me if the offense takes a step back. But hopefully the defense, which has really been the biggest problem lately, hopefully that it will be better.
All right, now I have a brutal question to ask you, Memphis basketball related, as Dane Danger, we're doing the Hail Mary waiver thing again, like we did a couple of years ago with DeAndre Williams, and we'll see what happens. I talked about it before you came on. I think the case should be easier, but obviously because Dane was academically ineligible or had academic issues in the three games that he played at Baylor, that's in the NCAA's mind, and same thing with DeAndre Williams when he was at Evansville. He got denied because of that fact. I looked at Chad Baker-Mazzara and how many games he's played, and Tremont Mark played at Texas again this year. He had 5 years of eligibility. Just looking at the general idea of how many guys get extra years, it feels like Dane should be able to get an extra year. Don't know if that's going to work out that way. But Connor asked a question that just brutalized me. I have no idea how to answer this. When we look at the upside of what DeAndre Williams could have brought that team a couple years ago, and obviously we're looking at it with hindsight, versus what Dane Danger could add to this particular team, which one of those two do you think would have or should be more viewed as more important to potentially get that waiver approved and get them on the team?
This is so DeAndre would have joined which team?
He would that would have been the David Jones, that team, right?
I think I'm just going to say this team's more important, and this is more important. And the reason is, I don't think as great a team guy and as great a sort of leader, I don't think that team.
You don't think you would have got through to them?
I don't think they're capable of being saved, right? And so I think that in the end, it was such a mess that I don't think DeAndre Williams could have fixed it. Now, maybe.
But the Caleb Mills thing was a really big.
I was about to say that. Caleb Mills did sort of, when you had that willing to do anything presence in Caleb Mills, who seemed really that much better. Were they just hitting their shots at the end? You know, were they really? I mean, they did. They didn't. They hadn't fallen apart yet.
They didn't have a good defense, though, after Caleb Mills went out. I mean, their perimeter defense was gone.
But this team, it seems to me, and again, we don't really know. It hasn't. We haven't seen it. We haven't. So this is speculation. It strikes me that this team, you know, unless P.J. Hegarty does come back, and I gather the door is still open there, whatever.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem likely. It doesn't really have a fulcrum, you know? Like, it needs its best player, don't you think? Like, who is its best player? And
right.
if you have Dane Danger on this team, and maybe I'm a prisoner of what I just saw, you know, in the two tournaments, he's tremendous.
Yeah.
And not only that, he was on such an upward trajectory, having figured it out. I can only, and Penny having figured out how to use him, and like, I can only imagine that this next year would be, you know, you give me a season of like we saw the first half of Dane Danger in the NCAA tournament game. You know, you give me that for a season. I'm taking that. I'm taking that on this team that I think needs a fulcrum, a best
player. Sure.
And
right.
So I'm going to say this. What were the answers that you took?
I said Dane's more important. Connor said, you know, because like the way I put it is I think DeAndre Williams could have potentially made that team with his leadership and his activity.
Oh, right.
He could have made them
same.
An NCAA tournament team, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that Dane adding this team, I already sort of have said this team's going to be better in the AAC than anybody else, and the AAC stinks. You're looking at Tulane. So I think that they're a tournament team. I think Dane Danger adding could be the difference between winning and losing in the tournament and a run.
Is, though, are they going to, without Dane Danger, are they going to be good? They clearly will be, it seems like, probably better than anyone else. Will they be significantly better, enough better than everyone else, that they will have – that they will have their bid locked up before the AAC tournament? Or are they going to be in danger of getting knocked out? Will it be a one bid league next year? And so sure, they're the best in that league, but they still have to win the damn tournament. And that's, you know, not always a gimme.
And to your point about being a fulcrum, one thing that I have really struggled with is I look at this team that Penny has gotten out of the transfer portal. And I say, okay, this seems like a deep team with some quantity, but also a fair amount of quality. So it's like you look at the pieces and you're like, oh, that's great. But like I get your point as well, where it's like all of Penny's good teams had a fulcrum, you know, scorer, top of the pecking order, guy that
right.
you could count on game after game after game. And Dane absolutely would provide that. But like that is something I've struggled with because I look at the pieces and how they could potentially meld together and I say, okay, this team could be good. But I don't know at all who that guy could be on this team without Dane Danger. And we've seen in the past that hasn't necessarily
Penny hasn't been great at sorting that out. Penny has not been great at sorting
right.
that out.
When it's not obvious. When it's not obvious.
Right. Yes, right. Right. I like that we've used the word fulcrum for the first time
yes.
on the, you know, on really that I probably ever used it on Sports Talk Radio. So I appreciate that. But yeah, so that's why I'm gonna vote for Dane Danger. Plus, he's just fun to watch play.
Yeah.
You know? He is fun to watch play. DeAndre was too because he was so expressive and because he's one of those guys who, I mean, honestly, during the game, he's running through a wall doing anything he possibly can. And he's also unpredictable. He's got a little Tony Allen craziness to him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then after the game, he's in there in a way that Dane really wasn't, so far as I could tell. He's in there, like, hugging people in the stands and mingling with everybody. And, you know, so he was a massive asset. Was DeAndre Williams. So it's hard for me to pick against him, but I'm a prisoner of what I just saw from Dane Danger, which was magnificent.
All right, now I have to get to the debate that's sweeping the nation. I'll leave you with this. We need the you know, 30-year-plus columnist response to this. We need the Harvard grad response to this debate. Connor and I have been trying to settle it.
We've gotten some
answers.
Harvard the new Prime Minister of Canada, Harvard guy, played goalie. Played
nice.
Goalie, hockey goalie for the Crimson.
Okay.
So there you go.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, not just
nice
another
fun
Harvard
fact.
Guy,
I like that fun
against
fact.
All odds. Making it against all odds.
All odds. <Yeah. laughs> Yeah, those Harvard guys never do anything. You really have to beat the odds to get to the top.
Prime Minister of our 51st state. Very proud. Very proud. The new governor.
All right.
Okay, what's the question?
100 men versus one gorilla, one silverback gorilla. What do you who you got?
100 men?
100 men. Have you seen this debate? Come on, Jeff.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
I'm oblivious to the debate.
Okay, well, this is on social media. 180 million views this tweet got. And this social media got, and everybody has been discussing it going back and forth since.
I'm kind of proud that I didn't know about this.
This guy,
the
guy said, I think 100 men, as long as they're bought in, can beat the gorilla.
Easy.
You're taking 100 men over a gorilla.
The question is whether you would take 20 men over a gorilla.
I don't know if I'd do that. I think 20 men.
100 men over the gorilla?
Yeah. This is easy to you.
Easy.
Now, the argument for the gorilla is pretty simple.
Can men use tools? Can they pick
up tools? No. No weapons. No weapons. Bare hands.
I still think. Now, the problem is that 100 men, it's hard for them to all bring their physical presence to bear simultaneously, right?
Right.
So, because 100 men can't. So you'd have to have waves, right, of 10 or 20 or something like that. How many could actually be effectively tackling a gorilla?
So, again, here's the tale of the tape with the gorilla. If it stands straight up, 6 foot five, 400 to 500 pounds, its skin is 2 to 4 times thicker than a human being's, and its bones are 2 to 4 times denser than a human being's. So this is the only thing I struggle with. I think you beat it with quantity. As long as everybody's bought in.
100 men.
I think you can handle business with quantity. The only issue I have had with this entire discussion is how do you actually hurt the gorilla as a human being? Do you have to go for eyes? You have to fight dirty.
Eyes.
Yeah, but I don't know how you actually, with knowing that skin is thicker, knowing that a bite wouldn't do anything, knowing that he can push or pull 4,000 pounds of force. That's the only thing. How do you inflict damage on the gorilla? That's the one thing I've struggled with.
Right, and we can't use tools.
Yeah.
So you can't pick up a clock on the head with a rock or anything. But I can see that it being a difficult situation. I can see that would be...
Now, human nature, if you actually did this, one man would get his arm ripped off and the rest of the 99 men would run for the hills.
No. You'd have to do a situation where everyone knew it was to the death, right?
Right.
If you don't beat this gorilla...
You're not coming out with your life.
You will all be shy. You know what I mean? You'd have to do that.
Full cage match, WWE style?
Hour. If you don't kill the gorilla within an hour, you will all be shot. Don't you then think the men could take the gorilla?
I think quantity wins here. Now, I'm of the opinion gorilla's probably taking out 30 to 50 of the guys, of the men. Easily.
Well, once he's got 50, then what's another 50?
It's quantity. And the other question for the silverback is, what's his conditioning like? You know, how much has he been in the gym hitting the heavy bag?
You got to say it's a fully healthy, you know, 5-year-old, 7-year-old silverback in the prime condition. And let's be honest, 100 men aren't me, you know. We don't want me. But if you could pick 100 men, you know.
We need the mountain from Game of Thrones. We need John Jones.
Or even this NFL draft class, you know?
Yeah, okay. I guess, but we also have corners.
What's
a corner going to do? What's a corner going to do in that situation? Disorient it and sprint in front of it? I don't know about that.
What do you want? You want linebackers, DLs?
I need anything linebacker and above from a weight perspective.
Right. Yeah, linebackers, DLs. Do you need offensive linemen?
You need offensive linemen. Absolutely. But they would be the first ones out there just to tire the thing out with their weight. You know, you're throwing around 300 to 350 pounds of weight for 20 guys. I think that would tire it out. I'm surprised you didn't see this though, Jeff.
I'm not only surprised, I'm impressed by myself. Yeah. This is great.
Well done, honestly.
My heart's
staying out of
in the right place. My attention is in the right place. All right.
Great stuff. Appreciate it,
see
Jeff.
Ya.
He is Jeff Calkins, saying 100 men would beat the one silverback gorilla. He's on X at Jeff_Calkins. You can follow his work at the Daily Memphian as a columnist and his work right here at 92.9 ESPN, not talking about what we just talked about on his particular show, weekdays 9 to 11. Again, right here, 92.9 ESPN. You look like you have a take on what Jeff had to say.
No, I mean, I think that we all agree the humans would win. Yeah. I think that that is the correct answer. I do think that at minimum, like, 25 to 30 are dying, though.
Yeah.
That first wave, sorry, no, y'all dead.
Van Lathan put it out. What he called them?
Some of you will die.
He called them the meat sacks, basically. He said the Vince Wilfork types of the first wave.
It's how do we decide?
Bloody, he called it a bloody mess.
Are we drawing straws? Is it names from a hat? Do we go Hunger Games style?
And do we need like a coach or like a general out there to give us our plan?
Who would be our coach?
Joe Mazzulla.
Oh my God.
Crazy man. I think we found it.
Did you see what he said about Chris? Or
yeah, I like seeing him bleed.
Nobody's been arrested. It's like, well
maybe. Did you see what he said about Chris Stapps Porzingis? He's like, I think it's important to see him bleed out there. Psycho. Okay.
Joe, my arm's gone. Get back in there.
Yeah, you're good. You have another one. It's fine.
I feel dizzy. I'm woozy, man. You stabbed me too much. You
know, the post-game interview, the post-Silverback versus 100 men with Joe Mazzulla, that'd be a fun presser.
He's just covered in blood. Yeah. He's like, nobody got arrested. I'm going to go watch The Town.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you'd watch The Town before and after. Because yeah, does he do that before every game still, or is that just like,
he brought up The Accountant recently, too. I think he's an Affleck head. The Accountant rocks.
Well, but, okay.
That movie rocks.
But, like, The Town is, like, the Bostonian. Like,
that's yeah. The idea. It's that or The Departed.
Yeah.
The Verdict.
Okay, The Accountant.
That's not really, like, a...
The Accountant 2 came out recently.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but...
Okay, I haven't seen it either, so...
I've heard okay things.
Okay. All right. All right. Now, let's go ahead and grab a break. We'll be back with more of the Gabe Kuhn Show right here on 92.9 FM ESPN next. Well, it's going to be an interesting offseason in the NBA when it comes to head coaching hires. The Grizzlies are looking for a coach, but we do have one team in the Western Conference who has made a decision on their head coach, and that is the Sacramento Kings. They have signed their interim head coach after Mike Brown got fired midseason, Doug Christie, to a multi-year contract to make him the franchise's next head coach. This is what Shams Charania reported today. Sacramento went 27-24 this season under Christie, ranking ninth in offensive efficiency during that span. They went 13-10 in clutch time while Christie was coaching, compared to 6-13 under Mike Brown. So all of these decisions came together to make Doug Christie the decision for their GM, their new GM, Scott Perry. I don't know what to make of this decision. I will just say this, when it comes to the Kings, regardless of who the head coach is, whatever you think that roster looks like, just write them in for the play-in tournament next year. But I guess Doug Christie did a good enough job to ultimately get the head job. Now the question becomes, in Grizzlies land, did Tomas Isolo do the same thing for the Grizzlies? Now I know that 27-24 is a lot more games, a lot more practices than Tomas Isolo had to impart his wisdom onto this Grizzlies team. I understand that the Kings made a whole bunch of changes at the trade deadline, bringing in Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan from the Chicago Bulls. There's a lot of different things that completely nullify trying to make a one-to-one comparison. But I guess the question for me, looking at an interim getting hired, will the Grizzlies go the same direction?
I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't necessarily expecting them to keep around Doug Christie. There were some things that he did really well, but at the end of the day, I still just don't think they were good enough.
Right. 27-24, that's dangerously close to 500, like sort of what their team is.
I think it matters the context of they traded away maybe his best player needs to be included in the conversation about him, because they did get rid of De'Aaron Fox and that team was going through turnover.
You brought in DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine.
And Jake LaRavia.
And Jake LaRavia. But it is kind of funny to me, the way that the Kings were talking about their end of the season woes and their issues is, you know, you had Domantas Sabonis up there at the exit interviews and with the press basically saying we needed a point guard, we didn't have a point guard. Well, you traded away that point guard for all of the pieces you brought in around you. So, like, the Kings, I still think, again, write them into the play-in next year. That's sort of usually where they end up. But you know, hiring Doug Christie after what he did, I found to be a bit interesting because it's not like that team really took a bunch of steps in the right direction.
I think it's a similar situation, though, to the Grizzlies, where I think ultimately the Kings' issues are way more about their roster than their coach. It's more about the roster than the coach, and it's the same thing with the Grizzlies. If the Grizzlies don't do anything with the roster, it doesn't matter what coach you have. They're not good enough. They don't have the players to get it done. It doesn't matter how good your coach is. A coach can only improve you as much as your team is ready to improve. And that's where, like, the Kings, they've got to make some changes. Because they can't run it back again with this team, or, like you said, they'll be in the play-in once again. They peaked last year. It felt like they maybe had a chance to get something in done, and then they just weren't able to do it. They just didn't improve at all this season. They got worse this season. They benefited from some teams having injury-filled seasons like the Memphis Grizzlies last year. It's one of the reasons they got where they were. But then you had somebody like Murray who just kind of plateaued this season. He didn't improve as much. So I think it's very similar to the Grizzlies. Do something with your roster. The coach isn't going to change that much. You have to fix your roster first.
Now, true. I completely understand that. But given that, you know, those are going to have to be done sort of simultaneously, you're going to have to improve the roster and hire a coach at the same time. Are there names that you like more than others in this particular Grizzly search? While you're chewing on that, I'll give you the two that I like. And DeMichael Cole mentioned them yesterday on the show. I think that they should give a real look to Sam Cassell.
Yeah.
He's been on an assistant coaching bench for
a long,
long time.
He's the first one that comes to mind.
A former player. I think he can command respect in that locker room. He can come in and really help. He's been around some good offenses. He can get this offense maybe revolutionized to a certain extent. We'll see how that works out. He's from sort of the old school NBA where they did play a fair amount of defense, so maybe he can help there as well. And then, Mike Brown, I know that there's some negative views around him, you know, just considering the way it ended with Sacramento and how badly they started the season before they fired him. But he has some experience with star players. Look at LeBron James. Look at what he was able to do on the bench with the Warriors for years. He was part of the staff that won their last championship. And he's a guy that I don't think is sort of that fire breather that can disrupt the young players, notably Ja Morant, on this particular roster. But he brings some experience, some championship experience that I think the Grizzlies could find useful.
Yeah, it's Sam Cassell, Mike Brown, you know, Frank Vogel's gotten thrown around. I think Royal Ivy would be an interesting guy to look at. He's part of Ime Udoka's staff down in Houston. I think he could be somebody to look at. It's just the Grizzlies have to decide, do you want to take a chance on a first-time head coach like somebody like T.I., Tomas Isolo, or
that clearly they already have some level of trust in.
Yeah, it's just the thing that you have to balance is some of these coaches are available for a reason.
Yes.
And that's kind of what you have to balance of, okay, do you hire somebody that hasn't worked out for a team necessarily before, but they have a proven track record, they've got it done before, can they help take this team over the hump, or do you take a chance on somebody like a Sam Cassell or a Tomas Isolo or an Ivy, or name an assistant coach that might be able to get it done. Like James Borrego is still out there as well. There are coaches available right now that would be good coaches. I still think Steve Nash would be somebody that I would like to take a look at. He had success with the Brooklyn Nets. I don't think that their issues were necessarily because of him. Again, I think it was more roster than it was him. And they were also a toe away from really making a run there from Kevin Durant. So I think there are a lot of available coaches, and that is why I want the Grizzlies to do a real
search.
Now, if you ask me right now, I would not be shocked if it's Tomas Isolo because of everything that we know about how they brought him over here. And the
exit interviews went well for him, quite frankly.
And so I don't have a ton of faith in him right now, but I wouldn't necessarily say that he got a fair shake because of how the season went, the injuries, the roster isn't ready. And again, I just think if this roster doesn't change, man, it doesn't matter if they brought in Red Auerbach. They're not going to fix this team unless they bring in real players that can get this thing done. Veteran wing players, somebody that can shoot a three, defend the wing. That has to be priority. Has to be.
100%. Now, SmokeSlam 2025 is right around the corner. The world's ultimate barbecue showdown is back. May 15th through the 17th at Tom Lee Park on the riverfront here in the city of Memphis. Nearly 75 teams are competing for the biggest barbecue purse in barbecue competition history. $250,000 is on the line, so the stakes are as high as they get. And there's more than just a barbecue competition. It's going to be an immersive experience for the whole family. Of course, you'll get the barbecue, all the barbecue you could possibly eat. But they have a big Ferris wheel, fairground fun, fireworks every night, book signings. So make sure that you're taking advantage. It's a great thing for the whole family. And they'll have a music lineup. Shane Smith and the Saints, the Revivalists, Waylon Wyatt. They're going to have Southern Avenue there. Three-day passes and single-day tickets are on sale now, and they're going very, very fast. So take advantage while you can. They also have VIP experiences available. But to get those three-day passes, single-day tickets, or VIP experiences, you can go get the tickets at smokeslam.com. Again, that is smokeslam.com, May 15th through the 17th at Tom Lee Park on the riverfront in Memphis. Now it's time for small talk and the Eagles visited the White House yesterday. I'll take you through the notes. Now, there are a lot of reasons I work out and why I work out at LA Fitness, but if I'm giving you the crux of why I go and get a workout in every single day at LA Fitness, it's because I have a little one that I have to run around and follow every single day. And I want to stay around as long as possible to make sure that he has a father in his life. So if you're just like me and you want to make sure that you stay as healthy as possible for as long as possible, that's great. If you're trying to set a new PR, if you're running a 5K, if you're going to run a marathon, those are also some reasons that you can work out at LA Fitness. But they've got a killer new lift room, group fitness classes. If you have a little one and you need to go work out, they have babysitting for $10 a month, all without wrecking your wallet. But those are my whys. Whatever yours are, make sure that you go sign up for LA Fitness. You can get a free 3-day trial pass at lafitness.com to see if you like it. And if you love it, membership starts at just $24.99 per month with 7 clubs in the Memphis area. There's always a convenient location nearby. You can join now for $24.99 per month, $59 annual to access any single club in the Memphis area. Membership auto renews and requires first and last month's dues at joining. Additional terms and conditions apply, but make sure you go sign up for LA Fitness. Great, great deal with that free day, free trial. And of course, just $24.99 per month with those 7 locations here in Memphis. Now, without further ado, we need to go ahead and talk about the Eagles and their trip to the White House. Let's get to small talk. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. So I have some notes here on the White House visit for the Eagles because it was kind of insane. It was a little bit much for me. Obviously, there were some notable omissions. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first of all, we have to start with the president saying that he told the Giants not to trade Saquon Barkley. So he took credit for Saquon Barkley and how good he was. He takes credit for a lot of things, but Saquon Barkley is just next in line. I did notice, and this was probably the funniest thing that happened, cornerback, very young cornerback out of college a couple of years ago, Eli Ricks. He enjoyed his White House visit. Did you see why he enjoyed his White House visit?
I did not.
He tweeted about Ivanka Trump. Here were his tweets after he left the White House. Donald Trump's daughter is beautiful, damn. And he said, after seeing her in person, Ivanka is exactly my type. So Eli Ricks, young cornerback for the Philadelphia Eagles, is trying to make a run at Ivanka Trump. Now, among other stories, this is probably the biggest story, there were a lot of Eagles not at the White House. A lot of Eagles, including Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Brandon Graham, Darius Slay, Nolan Smith, Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Zach Bond, N'Kobe Dean, Isaiah Rogers, Jalix Hunt, and Josh Sweat. Now, Jalen Hurts was asked why he did not show up to the White House, and he said, quote-unquote, that he had a scheduling conflict, and most of the other guys said they had a scheduling conflict. I don't buy that in the slightest, and the reason I don't buy it is because I understand why they didn't go. I completely get it. You know what the scheduling conflict was? He's tired of seeing people get deported without due process. He's tired of seeing judges get arrested without due process. He's tired of seeing the Constitution be stepped on and run around on a consistent basis, and he's been seeing it through the first 100 days of this presidency. Most of these guys have been seeing it for the first 100 days of this presidency. So He can say it's a scheduling conflict all he wants, Connor. But I get it. I understand it. And I don't shame them in the slightest for the decision that they've decided to make. I know I'm coming from this from a biased perspective. I know I don't like the president and what he has stood for and what he has done in his first 100 days, months, whatever it is, in office. But honestly, I'll say it to all these guys who didn't show up. Good on them. Good on them for standing for what they believe in. It's as simple as that. That's what the scheduling conflict was.
I think I would have had a scheduling conflict too. I don't really have much more to add. It's, you know, I understand why they weren't there.
Yep. I'm with you.
Unfortunately, an office that is supposed to bring people together has not been doing that.
Yeah. And what really bothers me the most is all of the distractions and sort of the tweeting about, you know, Shedeur Sanders trying to avoid and deflect from what's actually happening in the world right now, if you're paying attention. And for any player in any sport who wins a championship, who gets invited, I don't blame them for not participating in that type of distraction, considering the things that have transpired as of late. You have no obligation to allow an office that you disagree with, to allow an office who has gotten away with some human rights violations. You have no obligation to allow them to distract from what they're doing in the real world. I know that sports are a distraction. I know some people are going to be pissed off that I'm talking this way about what happened yesterday at the White House. And quite frankly, I don't give a damn. I don't care. I'm allowed to speak my mind. Those guys are allowed to skip on trying to be a distraction for President Trump's office and all of the appointments he made and what they're doing with foreign citizens and, you know, immigrants, judges in the state of Wisconsin. They have no obligation to allow that to transpire and to be a distraction for everybody to watch on national television. They have no obligation to be in the same room or to back up what the president and the people around him have done. I'll just leave it at that.
It's been a long 100 days.
The longest 100 days, quite frankly. The longest 100 days. Now, let's go ahead and grab a quick break. And when we come back, we will start up hour number 3. We have some NFL draft to get to with Christian Fowler on the other side. Stick around.